Our lesson this morning is about a Roman ruler who came face to face with Jesus for a few hours one morning on the stage of human history. And because of that one brief encounter, he secured for himself a never-to-be-forgotten place in history, a place more infamous than famous. And let's begin reading now in Mark 15, verse 1 beginning. And as soon as it was morning, the chief priest held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. And they bound Jesus and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said." And the chief priest accused him of many things. And Pilate again asked him, "Have you no answer to make? See how many charges they bring against you." But Jesus made no further answer, so that Pilate was amazed. Now at the feast, he used to release for them one prisoner whom they asked. And among the rebels in prison who had committed murder in the insurrection, there was a man called Barabbas. And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. And he answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priest had delivered him up. But the chief priest stirred up the crowd to have him released for them Barabbas instead. And Pilate again said to them, "Then what shall I do with the man you call the king of the Jews?" And they cried out, "Crucify him." And Pilate said to them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Crucify him." So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released for them Barabbas. And having scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Pontius Pilate, the enigma, the man who handed Jesus over to be crucified, a man who was caught in a terrible dilemma. And no matter how many times we read the story, it's still difficult to know, at least it is for me, what he really thought about and how he really felt about the various events that went on in connection with that. Secular historians like Philo and Josephus tell us that Pilate was an inflexible, stubborn, cruel individual, and that he was eventually removed from office and banished because of these characteristics of his personal behavior. But still, in the presence of Jesus, it seems to me that he struggled at times to know what to do. He certainly struggled to do the right thing, didn't he? Now, in the early centuries of Christianity, historians and theologians who wrote about the death of Jesus often included Pontius Pilate in their writings. For example, when what is known as the Apostles' Creed was written in the latter part of the 4th century, this was a writing about the apostles' teaching and preaching about the gospel of Christ. When that was formulated, all three members of the Godhead are included or mentioned in that writing, but only two individuals are mentioned. One of them, as you might suspect, was the Virgin Mary, through whom the Christ made his entrance into the world. But the other was Pontius Pilate. It says of him that Christ suffered under Pontius Pilate. Why Pontius Pilate? Couldn't they have just as easily have said he was betrayed by Judas Iscariot? Couldn't they have said he was denied by Simon Peter? Couldn't they have said that he was delivered up by the high priest Caiaphas? Why should they single out Pontius Pilate, a third-rate, third-rate Roman politician? Why did they single him out to mention in this historical record? Well, the immediate reason, of course, would be because he was the presiding officer. He was the judge that morning who tried Jesus' case. But church historians and theologians alike agree that there was more to it than that. That when he made this judgment, he did it not merely as a local representative of Rome, but as a public official who issued a judgment far more significant than just his own opinion. That in the providence of God, though he was acting now of his own free will, he was actually accomplishing God's will. And the Apostle Peter makes that clear to us, doesn't he, in Acts chapter 2, when he said, Jesus was delivered up according to the definite plan and foreknowledge of God. And so the record of Jesus before Pilate is filled with lots of irony. And before we finish this morning, we'll talk about some of these ironies. But I want to remind you that all four records of the gospel record this account, tell about Pilate and before Jesus. Mark customarily gives us a brief summary of all that happened. And then the other three records of the gospel fill in the details. And it's kind of like putting together a puzzle when you read this encounter of Jesus and Pontius Pilate. It's kind of hard to put together at times, but if you keep working at it, you are rewarded with a complete picture that is quite clear. So the gospel writers refer to him as governor of Judea. Actually, his title was prefect of Judea. And these individuals who served in various places as prefects or governors came from the equestrian class. Thought I was doing a lot better than I am, but they came from the equestrian class, the Roman guard. And generally speaking, they were middle-class Roman citizens. They owned some property. And they were usually assigned to small territories who needed watching. And so Pilate was appointed the fifth prefect of Judea in 26 A.D., and he served until 37 A.D. He made his headquarters in the city of Caesarea on the Mediterranean Sea, where Herod the Great had built a palace. But whenever the Jews had a large gathering in Jerusalem, he would travel there to be on site, to maintain order, to make sure that everything went well. That was the main job of these prefects. They were to keep things under control, they were to collect taxes, and they were to make sure to keep the peace. So, the Romans usually let the local people continue with their own religion and govern themselves to a degree, withholding the right to capital punishment, of course. So it was that Pilate had come from Rome to Israel some 7 years before this event. And when he arrived, he was typically Roman. He knew very little about the Jewish law and customs, and the evidence suggests that he did very little to remedy that situation. And this led the local people to to the point that, to where they despised him, and he returned the favor. Several incidents had happened during his reign, not involving just harassment, but also bloodshed. These incidents made the people not like him. On one occasion, Roman legions were led into the temple court, and they banished swords with banners or spears with banners on the ends of those spears bearing the image of the emperor. He built them an aqueduct to bring water into the city, which was a good thing, but he didn't get any credit for it because he financed it with money taken from the temple treasury. And so now it's the Passover season, and Pontius Pilate is in Jerusalem, and so also is Herod. Now, this isn't Herod's territory, but he's there nonetheless. And so is Annas, the former Jewish high priest, and Caiaphas, the current high priest, and thousands of Jewish pilgrims who have come from all parts of Israel and the world. And someone else is there. Jesus is there with his disciples. So all the players are assembled. It's time for the final drama to begin. Just how much Pilate knew about Jesus, we don't know for sure, but certainly he knew something about him. Jesus had caused quite a stir among the people. He must have known that he was popular among the common people. And he must have heard all the rumors flying around the countryside concerning him. And he must also have known that the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders of the people didn't like him at all. See, it was his job as prefect to know these things. And he was certainly a good politician, if not anything else. And so Pilate had a meeting with Jesus. He had several meetings with him. And these meetings that he had with Jesus gives us insight into his character. Front and center in their discussions was the question of Jesus being a king. Second, there was the discussion recorded by the Apostle John about truth and the nature of the kingdom. And third, there was the discussion of Jesus' guilt or innocence. And finally, there was the question of amnesty. When he was first charged by the Sanhedrin, they claimed to be the king of the Jews. They used that phrase intentionally, of course. It was designed to alarm Pilate and Herod, to cause them to think that perhaps Jesus was some kind of insurrectionist behind some kind of threat to the Roman authorities. It's only the second time the term is used in the New Testament. Remember when Jesus was born, we read that wise men came bearing gifts, desiring to worship him. And they asked in Jerusalem, "Where is he who is born King of the Jews?" That's the first time it was used. And of course, Herod the Great heard about this and he sent word to them, "When you find him, I want you to tell me where he is because I want to go worship him too." Of course, he was not being truthful about that because soon after that, he issued the decree to have the male children killed. But he was interested in protecting his authority as a king. And that was, of course, what Pilate would be interested in as well. So the Jewish authorities who brought this charge against him had him bound when they brought him to Pilate. When Jesus was arrested in the garden, you may remember that the soldiers came out to him and Jesus said to them, "Why do you come out here with clubs and spears and swords? Do you think I'm a criminal or a robber?" And Jesus went with them quietly, willingly, and there was no need to bind him. Now, the New Testament account of the trial of Jesus and was not just about pain and violence. Oh, they wanted him dead, all right. Make no mistake about that. But it was also about shame and mockery. They were doing everything in their power to humiliate Jesus in the eyes of the people. They took him bound to Pilate, and who heard the case like he would hear these cases in the morning, early in the morning. And so it was that early on this particular morning, they brought him to Pilate, bound with ropes or chains or whatever it is they were binding him with. And so the living Lamb of God was sent out of the Jewish law court, the Sanhedrin, which was nothing more than a kangaroo court, and was given over to the hands of the Gentiles, represented by Pilate. And Pilate asked him, "What charge do you bring?" And they answered him, "If this man was not doing evil, we would not have delivered him to you." Now, it seems to me that here they're running a bluff. They're running a bluff. They hope for a sentence, not a trial. They want him executed. But it's not. They don't accomplish their goal. Because Pilate said, "Well, then you take him and judge him. You take him and judge him." And then they had to come clean and reveal what their true motive was. They said, "It's not lawful for us to put him to death. He claims to be a king." And so Pilate enters into his headquarters and he talks to Jesus and he asks Jesus, "Is it true? Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus asked him, "I want to know, do you say this of yourself, or is this something other people are saying about me?" And Pilate responded, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation has brought this charge against you. Don't make this about me. What is the situation with you?" And so Mark has Jesus simply responding to this question by saying, "You say..." And the King James Version renders it this way, "What you say, Pilate, is the truth. Yes, I am a king." But from John's account, we learn that Jesus qualifies his statement. He said, "My kingdom is not of this world," he said. "If it were of this world, my subjects would rise up right now and set me free from the mob. But that's not the kind of king that I am." In other words, you have nothing to fear from me in terms of your political power. The Roman government has nothing to fear from me. My kingdom is not of this world. Thank you, Phil. My kingdom is not of this world. So, Jesus could have gone on to say, "Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world, but it's higher than the kingdom of Rome. My kingdom is the ultimate kingdom because I'm the King of Kings and I'm the Lord of Lords. Pilate, every governor, every prince, every king, every prefect one day will stand before my judgment." And Pilate said, "So you are a king." He inferred this, of course, because of what he had said. When Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world," the implication is I have a kingdom. It's just a different kind of kingdom. "So you have a kingdom. You must be a king." And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." John 18:37. So he doesn't deny that he's a king. But again, he describes the nature of his kingdom. "My kingdom is a spiritual kingdom. It's a kingdom of truth. That's why I came into the world, to bear witness to the truth." not to assert power, not to collect an army, not to subdue nations, but simply to present the truth to men and to exercise dominion by the word of truth. Why did Jesus come into the world? Well, he tells us in different places that he came for several reasons. In John chapter 10, he says, I come that they may have life and have it more abundantly. And I believe Randy referred to that last Sunday. And then in Mark 10, he says, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. And Ronnie last week in his lesson concerning Zacchaeus reminded us that Jesus said the Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost. But here, when he was on trial for his life, he said, I came to bear witness to the truth. I came to bear witness to the truth. I can't speak for all of history, but I've lived almost 81 years. And I can say to you that I've never known a time when our world, our society, is less interested in the truth than it seems to be at this present time. So when Jesus said, I came to bear witness to the truth, Pilate asked him the question that he's most famous for. He asked him, what is truth? Now, I don't know what Pilate was asking. I don't know what he really had in mind. There's no description of his facial expression. There are no words that qualify his question and suggest what it might. Was he being cynical? When we think about the kind of person that he was, according to the historians, it's hard to believe that he was really concerned about truth and what it is. But at the same time, in the presence of Jesus, lots of people seemingly had thoughts that normally they did not have. Was sarcasm dripping from his lips when he asked that question? Or was he for a brief moment in his life when truth incarnate was standing in front of him, was he really interested in hearing what Jesus had to say in answer to that question? But anyway, then Pilate gives his verdict. He says, I find no fault in this man. Matthew's account tells of Pilate's wife having a dream that was disturbing to her. And she sent word to him and said, have nothing to do with this man. Considered by Romans, Greeks, and even the Jews to be important. They relied on them as in somehow conveying God's will, maybe in some way. But never in his whole life had Pilate more accurately spoken than when he said, I find no fault with this man. And the reason he found no fault with Jesus was because there was no fault in him. And so after the discussion of the kingdom, after the discussion of truth and the importance of truth, after Pilate had pronounced him innocent, we come to the final aspect of Pilate's meeting with Jesus, and that has to do with amnesty. Pilate had a tradition, we're told, that during the Passover festival to the Jews, a prisoner with full amnesty. It seems to have been he seems to have been troubled by the fact that the Jews were trying to manipulate him and make him punish Jesus when he really felt that they had delivered him up for envy and that he had done nothing wrong. And so I think the record reveals in several ways that he actually tried several times to release him. And he fell upon this idea, the custom that he had. Look, I'll release to them. He thought about Barabbas, this murderer and insurrectionist, and I'll offer him to the people, and surely they'll take him over Jesus. They'll overrule the rulers. But he misread the people, didn't he? And they had been working the crowd. The leaders had been working the crowd. And so when he asked them that question, which one do you want me to release? A murderer or your king? Pilate completely misread the mob. He didn't account for the tenacity of these leaders and all that they would do to accomplish their goal. And so they cried out, give us Barabbas. Barabbas was his last name. Do you know what his first name was? We can't be sure, but there are some manuscripts, although not very reliable, there are some manuscripts that suggest that his name was Jesus. That his name was Jesus. And so it's a strange fact that what they were being asked was, do you want me to release to you Jesus Barabbas or Jesus of Nazareth? Which one do you want? And taking this irony a step further, you'll remember that the custom of the day was to they would refer to people sometimes by a particular quality that distinguished them. And they would say Bar. You remember Barnabas. The Bar part meant son of. And so we're told that Barnabas, the name Barnabas meant son of exhortation, son of consolation, and so forth. So Barabbas meant son of the father, son of Abba, son of father. Some think it had reference to a rabbi, son of the rabbi. So, but the real Barabbas was who? Was Jesus. Jesus was really the son of the Father, the son of the only begotten son of the Father. But they didn't want that Barabbas released to them. They wanted someone that they could live with, that they were not envious of, and that would not condemn them. And so they cried out, release unto us Jesus instead. Whom shall I release to you? Give us Barabbas. And Pilate, why? What evil has he done? And they cried out twice, crucify him, release him. Why? What evil has he done? The third time they cried out, crucify him, give us Barabbas. And so Pilate made this statement of the innocence of Jesus, and he washed his hands, you remember, before the crowd, saying, I'm innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourself. And then there's the statement in verse 15 of Mark 15. So Pilate, wanting to satisfy the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. After he had beaten Jesus, after he had mocked him, after he had shamed him, the very one who he had announced as innocent, he sentenced to be crucified. And he gave him over to the crowd to pacify them. It's almost like he was asking his associates, what's the latest Gallup poll? What does it say I should do? What's the politically correct thing to do? We must keep the people happy. And so he released Jesus to the crowd. Of course, Pilate was not the last one in history to do that sort of thing. But the good news is that we need to keep in mind, Pilate was putty in the hands of God, being used to bring about the redemption that God had ordained from all eternity. And you and I are left with the greatest question that one can ever face. What shall I do with Jesus? I apologize for, again I say, my wife and I have both been sick like many of you for several weeks. And I'd just been doing splendidly, I thought. And struggled here a while this morning. But this is the story of the face-to-face encounter between Pontius Pilate and Jesus. And Ronnie will be back next week, and with his next installment. Thank you much.